Welcome to the Artist Mother Podcast, featuring interviews with incredible working artists who are also mothers and compelling conversations regarding parenting and the art world. These conversations create a space for inclusivity and support for artist mothers worldwide. I'm Kaylin Butine, painter, mom of three, and podcast host. I'm so grateful you are tuning in, and I hope you enjoy this episode.
After having my first kid, my mind was blown. I mean, you go from being on one side of the world to being on another side of the world, and no one can possibly explain how difficult it is to be on the other side. Being pregnant is easy. Giving birth, in a way, is the most difficult thing in the world, but the baby in the world with you, keeping it alive, is literally cell restructuring, like on a base level, changing your body, especially as a woman who's trying to produce milk, is producing milk and then also bleeding and producing all these other fluids. So your body is like completely turning inside out in like some kind of grotesque sci-fi futuristic way that you have no language for. And after that, I realized my practice was going to have to be completely changed yet again.
It is such an honor to welcome the incredible artist Loie Hallowell to the podcast today. Known for paintings and drawings that explore the bodily landscape, Loie's practice exists in the liminal space between abstraction and figuration. Originating in autobiography, her work explores themes of sexuality, pregnancy, and birth, in referencing her own experiences. She was born and raised in Northern California and currently lives in New York City with her husband and two children. Loie, I'm so thrilled to talk to you today. Welcome to the Artist Mother Podcast. Thank you for taking the time.
It's so great to talk to you. Thanks for having me.
Of course. This is just such an honor. So I always like to begin by having my guests share something about their childhood that is connected to their life as an artist today. Just curious to know if arts was a part of your life growing up, or, you know, if it was something that you feel like is connected through another way.
Well, my dad was a professor at UC Davis in Northern California, and he was a professor of painting and drawing.
Well, there
and
you go.
And my mom is a seamstress and was a cartoonist for the local paper, a political cartoonist for a lot of my childhood. And I was, you know, surrounded by art teachers and artists and eccentrics my whole childhood. And I'm the first child. So I spent a lot of time, my first 4 years before my next sibling was born. I have three other siblings, but I'm the oldest. And for those first 4 years, I was spending them in my dad's studio or in my mom's sewing studio. So it was kind of my destiny.
Yes.
And, you know, none of my other siblings are artists. They're all very creative and, you know, like open to the arts, but mm-hmm. none of them are, you know, spending their life making art. So.
Interesting. Do you feel like there was like an expectation for you or one of your siblings to kind of go in the arts, or do you feel like it more just happened because that's what you were exposed to?
There was no expectation. I mean, in fact, my dad would go as far as, you know, saying, don't become an artist.
Don't be like
If you're going to become an artist, at least get, you know, become a teacher, mm-hmm. you know, learn how to teach. And he, you know, his philosophy was art doesn't care. You have to choose art. Art will leave you in the dust. And, you know, take everything from you, your mind and soul and body and everything. So, you know, if you decide to become an artist, do it with a full, you know, full commitment.
I love that.
And, but then I also had my mother as an influence too. And mm-hmm. she was, took care of all of us, four kids. and also found time to sew and make clothes for us and, you know, make her cartoons after we went to bed. Mm. And so I don't know, I feel like there were, I saw different options mm-hmm. as a creative person from a really young age. But I think in terms of my younger siblings, the next two were much closer in age, so they kind of became inseparable. And I think the 4-year gap between me and my next sibling is kind of a substantial gap. Mm-hmm. You know, 4 years is a long time to be an only child. I kind of like became set in my ways.
Yep.
And had that kind of spoiled childhood. Mm-hmm. And that I got to spend so much time with my dad and mom watching them in their studios. My son is the oldest. He's almost 3 now. And I had Juniper less than 2 years later. So they're less than 2 years apart. And there I can see already that they're going to be like inseparable in a way mm-hmm. that their decisions are kind of going to be dependent on each other and reflective of each other mm-hmm. in a way that I didn't have to make that comparison.
Yeah. Yeah. My sister, so I have one sibling, a sister who is 7 years younger than me. So I think what they say in psychology is that if you were an only child for 5 or 6 years, or if you were the first child and there was a 5 or 6 year gap, then you consider yourself an only child, like, mm-hmm. and it's really hard to sort of bridge that gap and bring in another sibling in your world. Like your mind is already oriented, oh, yeah. you know, to the idea of, I don't know, being raised as an only child, I guess, in a way. It sounds like even for the 4 year gap, some of that was present for you. Yeah, it's just interesting to like think about, I don't know, I love like, you know, just how thinking through like how influential your childhood is and like how much, I mean, it's a lot of pressure, but also as a parent, mm-hmm. it's a lot of pressure, but it's just interesting to look back on your own childhood and think about what kind of really, you know, shaped you in certain ways.
Yeah. I mean, that was one of the reasons I wanted to have my kids so close together was because I wanted that kind of connection that my two sisters have. They're 2 years apart. And then I have a brother who's 4 years younger than my youngest sister. So 10 years younger than me. And I almost, you know, I almost felt like I had like a parental role with mm-hmm. him. I mean, I was by no means acting right. as a parent, but I was like bossy enough to pretend I was a parent. And
yeah, you know all the right way to do things when you're the oldest child.
At 10, yeah. And so yeah, the having the kids close together was because of that. And then also just wanting to get parenting done mm-hmm. like at the same time and not have to relive these same kind of stages of development yes. over and over again that I saw my mom have to do basically in, you know, 4 different times of her life.
Yes, definitely understand that.
Like she was breastfeeding for probably, you know, close to 10 years straight. Yeah.
Okay. So describe your art for me. How do you kind of like to describe the work that you make and talk a little bit about some of the materials you use in your process?
Well, I started building up my painting surfaces in around 2015, 16 with gel medium and sawdust and all these like random materials I found. And over time, I've kind of streamlined the process and I have my shapes milled now with a CNC machine out of like a high density foam. And then I glue those shapes to the surface. And these are all kind of abstract geometric forms that protrude up to like 2 to 3 inches from the surface of my painting. So there's some areas that are, you know, flat, and there's some areas that are painted on the rounded surface. Mm-hmm. And I'm just really interested in, yeah, I would say my paintings, you know, like you described in the introduction, are somewhere between abstraction and figuration. And I'm really interested in that kind of light space of light hitting actual form space mm-hmm. and rendered illusory light. So that's kind of my reasoning for playing with this three-dimensional painting space. So like within each painting, mm-hmm. how can I have that play of illusory light and actual light reflecting off a textured painted surface, mm-hmm. a rounded textured surface.
Do you think that kind of move towards those sculptural forms really integrating with the painting? Like, I'm just curious about that transition and what was it that the flatter surface wasn't doing for you, or that you weren't feeling like you were gaining? And I asked that because I recently gave an artist talk and was talking about the trajectory of my work. And my work has gone from photography to painting to collage to textile, because I'm on that journey of like, it's never tactile enough. Like, I'm not, you know, kind of, I don't know. There's like something about the progression of my work has moved toward wanting more engagement with the material rather than kind of painting on a picture plane or taking a photograph, but just like really wanting to, you know, be in there and moving a needle through, or like working with collage. So I'm just curious a little bit about that journey for you, like kind of moving towards, you know, adding these more sculptural elements.
Yeah, I mean, it was for those reasons you described. And it was a specific set of paintings I was making where I had this kind of flat area of a flat area of color that I was sponging, and it was like a stippled texture. I was applying it with a sponge. So it had this, it was reflecting light in a certain way on the flat surface, almost sparkling. Mm-hmm. And then there was an area that I was rendering, you know, really like, you know, chiaroscuro, light to dark, mm-hmm. on this also flat painting surface. And that little area was this shape of a mandorla. It's like a little almond shape. And, it was kind of representational of my vagina. And there, mm-hmm. was something about the flatness and the painterly rendered nature of it that wasn't quite glowing enough. Like, I wanted that to be more or as dominant as this like really textured, stippled, light reflective space. Mm-hmm. So I just started building up this little mandorla shape. It was like, you know, an inch by 2 inch football shape. And it kind of came out an inch. And then just seeing rendering it the same way I would as if it was flat, but then also having the light hitting it, mm-hmm. pushed it into this next realm that was like more akin to the feeling I was trying to get with it being my vagina. Mm-hmm. So it was both taking it there conceptually and emotionally for me. And I feel like that's what digging into other materials aside from just paint is doing for me, is just like stimulating me emotionally to kind of get at the content that I want to get at in a more direct, assertive, aggressive way, both for me and the viewer. I feel like it takes the viewer there more directly as well. Mm-hmm. And I think by complicating the process in that way, I'm able to work with certain forms for a longer period of time, because it both takes longer to make a painting, mm-hmm. just to get to the place where I can start painting on the surface. And and it takes longer to actually make the painting itself, think about the painting, plan the construction of it. And I think there's like a
You're opening yourself up to more problems and questions, yes, in a way, right? Exactly. Like, you're kind of elongating the trajectory of the puzzling through the work.
Right. Of getting to that point of, aha, I've got it figured out. Like, that kind of struggle, I've kind of given myself a constant struggle. And recently I actually started with my first pregnancy. I took a body cast of myself, and at each trimester. So I had these three stages of body growth. And then I've been taking third trimester casts of other friends of mine who are pregnant, and using those parts of the body, the belly and the full breasts, in the work, like actually taking those casts and making molds and constructing them onto the surface of my panels. And in place of using these more simple geometric forms, actually using elements of the body. So I feel like recently I've been wanting to get even more deep into the that physicality of the content of my original reason for making the painting.
So that kind of leads into my next question of just thinking through the trajectory of your work and processing the painting sort of moving off the flat plane. I'm just wondering if that particular journey within your painting practice is parallel to becoming a mother. So, like, was there something about birth or pregnancy or sort of the physical evolution that your body has gone through that pushed, you know, those desires to make paintings in that way?
Yes, but it came before actually giving birth. So I started making these more geometric, abstract, bodily spaces on a flat plane after having an abortion, I think around 2014. Yeah, 2014. And I realized I needed to get at use a more abstract language to describe the like intensity of deciding to not go through with a pregnancy and also the like physical intensity of the abortion and the more so the emotional intensity afterwards. Mm-hmm. And so I started working with abstraction right after that experience. The building up of the surfaces came as a kind of a, you know, an artistic decision. Mm. It like was a necessity. The art was demanding that itself. That didn't have anything to do with like my outside world. It was all calling it from within. But yeah, my whole like visual language stemmed from that experience I had having an abortion.
Mm. And now, you know, the paintings you're making now
with
are
the body
directly-
parts.
Right.
Are physically my body and my friends' bodies at their most plump, ripe, full, impregnated. Sorry, I don't know how to say it. Yes.
So just wanting to hear you reflect a little bit about what it's like to, you know, make work about this topic and sort of be at the level that you're at, like showing at the places you're showing. And, you know, what do you feel like that's doing for other artists who are kind of seeing the work that you're making about birth, about a female body, you know, not from the male gaze, right? Just kind of wanting you to talk a little bit about the contextualization of the work that you're making and the significance of it.
You know, I can't speak to the significance of my work for other people. I don't know what that is for other people, but I mean, for me, it's helped me process, you know, having the support of my gallery to kind of take time in my studio to spend 2 months on a painting and then to find the right collector for that painting, like has offered me the stability to have children and feel like I not feel like I have to struggle or compromise in my practice. So, you know, it's for me working with the changes in my body and using my body as the subject matter gives me the space to kind of process all the changes that have happened over these past, you know, since I started making this abstract work since this abortion many years ago. So it's like a therapeutic practice.
Mm. So tell me a little bit about how you kind of structure your practice and your life. It sounds like you were already at a certain point in your career having stable collectors and gallery support before you started to have kids. Is that correct?
Yeah. I mean, I have to say there was a decision I made after moving to New York, and became more clear after deciding to have an abortion that I was choosing my career over having kids. And I didn't have any gallery support. I wasn't making sales at the time that I started making these little abstract vagina abortion paintings. But once I made that decision to not have a baby, I actually started getting interest in these paintings, which led to me making enough money to eventually stop working as an art handler, and previous to that, a nanny, and just work in the studio exclusively and explore this subject matter more in depth. And then once I was approached by Pace, I kind of started realizing that it might be possible to actually have a family and make art. I don't know if I would have had kids if I hadn't been lucky enough to have the support that I have. I can't speak to that.
I feel like you're specifically referencing the financial stability that.
Yeah. And maybe I would have, you know, maybe I would have met someone who would have left the city with me. You know, I know my husband would have been happy to leave the city and find, you know, different work. But I don't know if I don't know if I would. Like, I was just really, I mean, I was working close to full time and then coming home after work and painting in my little bedroom. Like, I had a little tiny, you know, 4 foot by 4 foot space and making these little tiny, you know, 9 by 12 inch paintings and working on that till midnight, going to bed and then working the next day. Like, I was very like interested, dedicated to making paintings, whether anyone wanted them or not. I was also younger, so I don't know. Maybe eventually I would have gotten fed up with that struggle.
Artist mothers know there's nothing more important than taking care of yourself, because if you're not feeling your best, you can't be your best. Sambucol helps you feel your best with powerful immune support, powered by nature's superfruit, black elderberry. I'm personally so grateful for Sambucol and their immune system supporting products. I think about my health a lot and feel like the best action I can take besides getting good sleep is nourishing my body by consuming healthy things that support my immune system. Sambucol elderberry gummies taste great, and I love that they are low in sugar and contain no gelatin, since my family is vegetarian. It's so easy to get my kiddos to eat one of these gummies every day, and it helps me feel good knowing my kids have the support from products like this, especially in a season of life where reinforcing our bodies with healthy things is just on our minds a lot. Sambucol is a trusted brand. It's the original black elderberry and was developed by a virologist, so I know I'm getting a great quality product. Get 15% off your next order of $9.99 or more at sambucolusa.com. Use code ARTIST15 for 15% off. Just as a note, these statements have not been evaluated by the Food and Drug Administration. This product is not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease. Thank you, Sambucol, for supporting the Artist Mother podcast. We so appreciate you and the products you're putting into the world. Again, Artist Mothers get 15% off your next order of $9.99 or more at sambucolusa.com and use code ARTIST15 for 15% off. Okay, so tell me about the experience of like having these expectations of wanting to maintain a certain amount of time and energy level into your practice, but then actually having kids and sort of the expectations, maybe like the reality, like just wondering if the reality of what that experience was like for you lined up with what you expected it to be, right? And how that's kind of transformed your practice.
Well, I mean, once I started selling my work consistently, I actually, you know, I had to start thinking about my studio as a place of work and everything extraneous, everything aside from making paintings, planning paintings, thinking about making work was kind of secondary. And when I get to the studio now, I'm in the studio and I try to be as focused as possible. Once I decided to have kids, I made a conscious decision to have a show lined up in a way that I could get the majority of the paintings done before I was 3 months pregnant. Like I started planning out everything before I even started trying to get pregnant. And, so that I could then have that income to take some time off. I also got my studio set up in a way that, you know, there was events going on next to, you know, every bit of, turpentine, not turpentine, but mineral spirits, and airflow through the space, making sure I had a space that could accommodate that. And then after having my first kid, my mind was blown. I mean, you go from being on one side of the world to being on another side of the world, and no one can possibly explain how difficult it is to be on the other side. Being pregnant is easy. Giving birth in a way is the most difficult thing in the world, but the baby in the world with you keeping it alive is literally, you know, is literally like cell restructuring, like on a base level, changing your body, especially as a woman who's trying to produce milk, is producing milk and then also bleeding and you're producing all these other fluids. So your body is like completely turning inside out in like some kind of grotesque sci-fi futuristic way that you have no language for. And after that, I realized my practice was going to have to be completely changed yet again. And that is when I decided I was going to have a strict studio schedule, like a 9 to 5 out of the studio by 5, unless it's previously discussed with my husband, workday. And also setting the expectations with my gallery at, to a realistic level, like this is what I can offer. This is then let's touch base in a month. This is actually what I've made.
Right.
Saying no to pretty much everything. I mean, at this point I have one or two shows scheduled for like a 2-year period that I'm committed to. And that took these past 2 years to figure out how to say no to everything, even to things that sounded really amazing. But kind of accepting my emotional ability to do that, because I could, you know, I could just come in the studio and plow away and kind of get through the work, finish the work as quickly as possible, but that's not leaving any room to sit and make corrections or edits or make a new drawing because the painting didn't quite satisfy what I was trying to get at and redo the painting again. Like there's no room for that if I'm saying yes to even one more thing. And it's taken me 2 kids to realize that I need to say no to pretty much everything.
Yeah. Or just being very, very selective about what you say yes to, right? I love that.
And and I guess that you, I don't say no right away. And that's kind of taken me time. I mean, there are certain things that I know I have to say no to right away, but to say, let me think on it for a week has been something I feel like I've become better able to do. And then within that week, make the decision. And usually it's no, but then I have a better way of explaining or expressing no.
Yeah. That's been something I've been trying to do, is just to make decisions slower, like, right. And not feeling
so hard
pressured to answer things right away or to make a commitment to somebody right away. Yeah.
I'm saying this now and realizing that I'm horrible at, I'm still so horrible at this. I'm like, my God, my husband's going to hear, if he listens to this, he's going to be like, talking about.
Yeah, right.
Yeah.
Okay. I want to hear a little bit about your studio practices. Like, what are some kind of, I don't know, rituals or routines like that you feel like are a part of your studio practice? I think that, you know, being that your kids are still so young, like that, it can often be hard to kind of switch from mom mode to 9 to 5, like work mode. I think having like those boundaries really help with that. But also, you know, just wondering about like what you kind of need to get in a really good space in the studio, and like what are some practical things that you do that help you engage in your studio practice in a way that, you know, feels enriching to you?
Well, I mean, I have to be honest, like, part of every day is like, you know, going through emails, planning things, realizing I need to stretch some more panels to get this painting even started, realizing I actually had committed a drawing to a group show, so I better get started on that, and kind of planning how long that's going to take. So there's all this like silly things that happen before I actually like get to work. And then eventually one day will come where I'm like, I have to just go in and just start drawing. So drawing is the place I go to. I have, you know, a small size drawing table, and I do soft pastel on pastel paper, like a textured pastel paper. And I think that is kind of the only place that I reset myself is within drawing. If I go in and just start painting, I feel a little, like I'm still a little lost. Unless I've kind of like been painting every day from the point of drawing. Like I actually, if I've been taking a few days off, just sending emails, recently looking for new studio assistants. Like there's all these little things that come up in my practice that take my time away from actually making the work. And that's actually been one of the most challenging developments once I started selling my work, was transitioning into the mindset of being, you know, also thinking of myself, or having to think of myself as a business. And it's, there was no education for me on that front. I didn't get that education in grad school. They don't teach that. I didn't get that from my dad, because he wasn't selling his work consistently. And in fact, had like an active hatred towards the New York art scene, art gallery world. Just kind of like finding mentors in that capacity was really important.
Tell me about that. Like what kind of mentors, you know, have,
I mean, people who, you know, women closer to my age at my gal at Pace, who could help me navigate like how to say no to something at my gallery, or how to say yes, but with contingencies, how to plan money. Like there's certain elements of one, you know, after you've struggled for so long, I've never had money, to then be making money, and how to plan it and plan, you know, save this amount for this, plan this amount for the studio, this amount for now childcare, healthcare, like all, you know, just actually like managing your life in a whole new way was really challenging. And I know this, you know, I know you just spoke with Amy Lincoln. You know, she's been working with an amazing gallery now, and she's been making sales, but I know she's been making even more sales recently. And this is like a very, I mean, it's amazing and wonderful and a beautiful thing to have happened, but it's also comes with stress. Mm-hmm. And it's you can't complain about these things to everyone. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
There's certain, you can't just go around being like, oh my God, I'm selling my paintings. It's so difficult. And I don't have enough time to make my paintings because, you know, this painting sold and this painting sold and this person wants a painting like this and this person wants a painting like this. It's, you know, you have to find a certain person to talk to about that.
Absolutely.
So I found, you know, at Pace, Tara Donovan was an artist that had been with the gallery for a while that was really instrumental in helping me. Another artist who helped me was Rashid Johnson. He reached out and was an early supporter of my work and offered a lot of like advice on how to, you know, just do business with a bigger gallery.
Mm-hmm. And I think that's so
really
great.
Helpful.
Yeah, especially because like being outside of New York, I think, you know, we just hear about how cutthroat and competitive and I'm sure that's all true, but just to know that, you know, there is an openness and generosity that is still happening. Like New York artists are not robots who are just kind of, you know, fighting to the death for these opportunities. Mm-hmm. I just think it's important to share, you know, that these things matter, like having conversations and sharing your knowledge with your peers, mm-hmm. Is really important. Cause like you said, a lot of this stuff is not specifically discussed in grad school or, you know, we're kind of working on models that are not, that are not fitting to the way that we want to live our lives now as artists, you know?
Well, especially as women who are having children,
right.
Like, and finally getting, it's new that women under 40 and around 40 are actually getting picked up by galleries, like, mm-hmm. you know, galleries that are able to sell their work. And there's a lot of, I feel like there's still expectations, I will speak for myself, that I put on myself as a mom, you know, seeing how my mom took care of us and feeling mm-hmm. like I'm not living up to that standard of parenting, and a lot of guilt that comes with that, you know, being at my studio full time, that I need to work through with other moms mm-hmm. who are in my position. And thankfully now there are a few I can list pretty much all of them on like 20, you know, 20 people. I mean, there's more, but in New York, you know, the people I have would be able to access. It's not like it's, you know, it's still rare,
right,
to find that companion that can help you.
Yeah. I think too, some of that is just because it wasn't, you know, acceptable really, I guess, to try to figure those things out, you know, 40 years ago. Like there was the shame and the stigma associated with, you know, being a woman artist, being a caregiver or a parent artist.
I mean, it was also it had a lot to do with how the gallery was structured, who the collector base was. I mean, a lot of the collectors of my work now are people who have kids, women who have mm-hmm. kids. I mean, there are people that understand the shifts in my work or understand the slowness of my process and are willing to wait. And then there's also a gallery who, a gallery that's willing to work with me mm-hmm. for a longer period of time. And also, give me that space. And I can't speak to past generations, but I know that there was not that flexibility with taking time off or, mm-hmm. you know, bringing the content of parenting, the struggles of, mm-hmm. of motherhood, of breastfeeding of the grotesqueness of this into the work and into the conversation with the collector and the gallery. Mm-hmm. That is now, you know, like just like yummy, yummy, yummy stuff to talk about now.
Yeah.
Culture in the culture.
Well, I think you can speak to it too, because you have your dad's, like you grew up with an artist who was a dad, dad being an artist. And so I'm just thinking, even comparing, you know, what the art world and what his experience of being a male in the art world was like, you know, earlier in his career, and then kind of what you're talking about now, just like connecting some of those threads and seeing the ways things have opened up mm-hmm. and changed is an important thing to think about and to do.
Yeah.
So nice to talk to you and just hear. Tell me, what are some big dreams and goals you have for your art career? And then we'll wrap up with our final five.
Right now, I'm really wanting to make sculpture, like actually get off of the wall and put stuff on the floor or hanging on the wall, but it's more sculptural. I mean, I've been thinking and making little models for a long time now. My husband is a is a sculptor, and he's actually like made work for me. Like, this is something you should try to make. Try yeah. this. And I've played with his models, and he's, you know, gently nudged me. And I think finally I'm able to visualize some things. And that's been something I've been trying to do for a while. So I don't know if it will actually happen, but, I also just have to note, I wouldn't be doing any of this without my husband. I mean, he's like in my studio pretty much full time helping me build up mm-hmm. my surfaces. He's kind of like the technician and the skilled crafts person that gets the paintings to the perfect state that I can then paint on them. So I guess another dream would be getting to a place where he doesn't have to be working so hard with mm-hmm. me. He could take a break and mm-hmm. make his own work. What are some other goals? I don't know. I'm pretty content where I am right now. I've been really setting a new tone with my gallery. This working in this new way with these cast body parts has been somewhat challenging mm-hmm. for them and for me in different ways. But I think we're both coming to terms with this is where I'm going to be heading, and that's yeah. just how it is. So I'm pretty happy that I'm kind of trying to expand the practice, but also hoping that I get more time to dig into these new body cast pieces mm. eventually.
Can't wait to see some sculpture. I think that's natural progression, right? For your work. It's coming.
Yeah, I know. It makes sense, but it's, I don't think like a sculptor, it's somehow really daunting. You know, I think of all the sculpture before as like, how would you ever do anything better than Noguchi? I mean, why would you even try?
Right.
Or Louis Bourgeois? Why? I mean, that perfection has been attained. There's how to even start.
Okay. So speaking of, let's move to our final five, just quick questions to end the episode for us to get to know you a little bit better. Who's your biggest art crush?
Well, right now would have to be Tishan Su. He had that beautiful show at the Sculpture Center a year or so ago. He's got an amazing show up right now at Miguel Abreu. Is that how you say the gallery's name?
Not sure.
In the city. He's just art, technology, body, morphing, the grotesque. It's just like it's so delicious and just like stimulating. I'm like obsessed with sci-fi, and specifically Bruce Sterling's The Schismatrix Plus, and his work just like takes me there, interests like instantly. Mm-hmm. But yeah, that's my art crush right now.
I love it. Okay. Favorite place to travel or a dream trip you'd like to go on?
The dream trip would be somehow going on a relaxing vacation with my two kids. I don't know where that would be. I don't know how that would actually happen because we've tried to go on vacation, but it's never been vacation. So that's the dream.
I'm surprised nobody has answered that question in that way before.
I don't. There has to be like some luxurious beach place where there's like a playground and amazing.
Yeah, we need more beach playgrounds. Come on.
But also there needs to be like accessible nanny care.
Yes.
At the playground.
Cleaning stations and
yeah.
Oh, I love that. Okay, tell me a film or book that has been a big inspiration to you.
Oh, I just mentioned it with regards to Tishan's work, but Schismatrix Plus by Bruce Sterling. It's just one of the best sci-fi books, and he's one of the best sci-fi writers. Anything by Ursula Le Guin, literally anything by Ursula Le Guin. But yep.
Awesome. Favorite meal?
Well, I recently was diagnosed with Hashimoto's disease. So I haven't been able to eat gluten because it's been doing this weird thing to my mouth. I think because of that, I don't know what's going on, but I have no longer a favorite food because my whole diet has had to change. I don't know how to answer that.
Oh, that's a bummer.
Having two kids fucks with your body.
Yes.
And I'm pretty sure that's why I got the autoimmune disease.
Yes, definitely. Well, favorite beverage then?
Oh, coffee.
Of course. Every artist's fuel, right?
Easy.
All right. And finally, just like to close by giving you the space to give a shout out to somebody who supports you in your work. You've mentioned a few people already, but
who comes to mind? Oh, it would be my husband, Brian Caverly. He literally does everything for me. So yes, Brian.
Okay, Loey, where can folks connect with you and follow your work?
Well, Instagram. I think it's Loey Hollowell, right? Yeah, Loey Hollowell. And I would just go there, and you
and
can
Pace.
Go to the Pace. The Pace website has like I don't think there's any of the newer bodycast stuff up on there yet. But if you want to see that stuff, it's all on Instagram.
And there's a great video.
Oh, R21 actually has some footage of that work.
Yeah, and I'll make sure we link to all of that. So folks can find it easily, but just, yeah, I love that Art 21. It's so good. Nice to kind of combine the
really
visuals.
Really fun to work with.
Yeah. Love it. Loey, thank you so much for taking the time. I know everyone is going to be excited to hear from you. Just really appreciate your vulnerability and willingness to talk
Thanks.
To the Artist Mother community.
The Artist Mother podcast is curated and produced by Kaylin Butine. Music by Josh Middleton. Editing and mixing by John M. Butine. Please visit www.artistmotherpodcast.com for episode notes and to find out how you can further support this podcast.